amazing Cultures to Parent support group are sponsoring this series of the Multi-Schools Lowdown. We offer support for families of children and young people with special educational needs in the Colchester area. To learn more and get in touch, please visit the MAYS website, themaysgroup.co.uk.
In this episode, we hear from Tracy. Tracy has helped drive forward the mental health teams in the north of Essex working in schools. And she talks about how these teams are going to work, why they're important, and the vision for the future. Tracy, could you just start by telling us about the mental health teams in schools? Kind of tell us what they are, why you think they're needed, and what they'll be doing.
So the mental health support teams, they're a relatively new concept. The government back in 2016 produced a green paper. So the green paper really was a manifesto that outlined what mental health services need to support children and young people and their families. And what came out of that was three key areas. And the three key areas were having designated mental health leads in schools and supporting schools and colleges to understand a lot more about mental health, you know, kind of engaging in terms of positive mental health awareness, promotion, and, you know, in terms of spotting it and identifying it to be able to refer it on. And then the other part of that was early intervention, which I'll come on to in a minute in terms of what the MHSTs do. And another part of this manifesto was to, you know, kind of design these mental health support teams that would work within schools and colleges to provide mental health support. And then the third part of this manifesto was about waiting times into mental health services before 2023. So where the mental health teams fit into that and what they are is that they are what we call an early intervention team. And so what we mean by early intervention is that if we can work with someone in the early stages of, you know, kind of their difficulties, so what we call them is the common mental health problems. So someone who has a mild to moderate mental health problem like anxiety, low mood, you know, kind of behavioural difficulties, those kind of things, that the mental health support teams would be able to work with those kind of mild to moderate problems. Mm. So in terms of what the mental health service support teams do is that they're comprised of what we call educational mental health practitioners. So they're currently kind of a new role, really. And what these educational mental health practitioners are able to do is provide CBT-based interventions, family-based interventions, and what we call whole school approaches, which is kind of supporting, you know, kind of different specialisms, you know, different services within the community and their schools to be better equipped to provide kind of mental health awareness training. So the teams, at the moment, the teams are quite small. So they're only serving, I think the aim from the government, from the Green Paper, is by 2023, these mental health support teams would serve a population of a quarter of the population. And with the hope of reviewing how these services perform to then gaining extra funding to continue to roll them out to serve a bigger percentage of the population. So that's kind of an overview from how they come to exist and a little bit about what they kind of look like. They're practitioners, so they're not therapists. That's quite important, but they're trained in being able to deliver specified interventions for mental health. So what we kind of look at them as is that they're going to be this linchpin of joining kind of like education and the NHS, you know, kind of like CAM service. So children, you know, in primary care, children and adolescents mental health services together. They all kind of provide very structured support over time limited sessions. So sessions are normally around 6 to 8 sessions, you know, working with someone. So again, it's quite short term, low intervention, so least intrusive as well. And what we can kind of understand about that is that when we kind of, you know, kind of work with these individuals, we could probably prevent them going to kind of quite serious, more severe mental health services for children and adolescents like EAMS and CAM. So there's a big thing here that we want to try and reduce, you know, kind of the waiting times to CAMHS via the MHST services. And actually the MHST services can kind of provide support and advice on, you know, kind of on referrals. So actually a school might want to discuss with the MHST team if a referral to CAMHS would be appropriate, or to EAMS in this case. And actually they can discuss that with the MHST service and make a decision. Deliver group interventions as well. Deliver, you know, kind of whole school approaches and support schools to deliver whole school approaches where they kind of promote better mental health and positive mental well-being, build resilience, you know, kind of ensure kind of better identification of different mental health difficulties. And kind of bringing all of that together is going to kind of help schools be able to better understand, you know, kind of where someone needs to be placed, but also feel like they have that support to build that confidence in their own ability to spot and manage mental health problems. So the MHST teams are really key in paving the way for a different future in mental health. You know, one that is going to move away from, you know, kind of healthcare and clinical settings, and actually bringing the kind of mental health support into the schools and colleges. So that's something else that's really key about the MHSTs, is that especially in North East Essex, we've embedded the service within the educational system, you know, to kind of make parents and children feel more comfortable, because actually we know that they're more confident in these kind of settings and more safe. So actually they're going to feel kind of more supported and less stigmatized if we can provide those kind of services in a setting that they're familiar and used to going to, and that they kind of have a lot of trust for. And also by us being based in schools, we provide that level of care and support for kind of educational staff, because they have a lot on them that they're expected to kind of, you know, really support people with mental health difficulties, but then they don't really have that experience in doing that. And they also kind of feel very scared at kind of intervening in something that they're not comfortable with themselves. But then there's a huge expectation for them to kind of be doing all of this extra work in identifying mental health, you know, providing positive support around mental health and well-being, you know, sending referrals to kind of healthcare. And I think a big thing for parents and children and the educational settings is that they've often reported referring to, you know, EAMS and CAM services to be very difficult to do and lack that understanding, or find it very difficult to get that child the support that it needs. Mm. So a big part of these mental health support teams is to kind of take all of that away, to have those links with these, you know, kind of child and adolescent mental health services, and kind of present a more fluid flow, you know, kind of from the school to the service that child needs is going to get the kind of best chance of recovering in.
Because you've given a really detailed answer there, and you've actually covered lots of what I was maybe going to ask you following on. So that's great, because I don't need to do that now. And I think it's really interesting, some of the points you made, certainly about the whole school approach, and just speaking with young people, they always tell us that that's so important, especially, you know, in secondary school, where they're maybe moving from class to class, subject to subject. They want an approach that every teacher and everyone buys into. So that completely works. And I think it's important, though, as well, that you mentioned that they're not therapists. It's that stage before, it's that early intervention. And you spoke about why early intervention is key. So because you mentioned so much, I just want to take a slightly different angle from maybe what I was going to ask you. With all of this that's going on, and obviously the fact that they are working in schools gives them access to those children a lot more regularly, why is it important that as a service you do engage with children and speak to them about, you know, the service and how it works? Because I know that's kind of how we've come into contact, because we're all about, you know, promoting people's voice and making sure their voices are heard. So as a service, how are you continuing to like engage with young people to make sure that, you know, it is meeting the needs from what they tell you?
No, that participation is key, you know, really key. And I think, again, that was another thing that was highlighted in the Green Paper Manifesto, was actually, you know, we can look at, you know, outcome measures and we can look at reporting. So I guess just to give people who are listening to this a bit more of a flavour in terms of how we kind of understand, you know, kind of what's happening out there in terms of mental health in adolescents and children, is we kind of, the NHS collect data, and they collect data from like lots of children and family filling out questionnaires when they go to services for specialised support around their mental health. And a lot of them kind of outcome measures will kind of measure things like, you know, how anxious they are, how depressed they are, self-esteem, about their kind of resilience to mental health. So through that, we can kind of look to see if the interventions that we're using with children are successful or not. So that's great. But actually, that's not enough on its own, you know, because that can tell us quite a lot about, you know, the kind of things that we're using. But actually using an intervention doesn't mean that children are going to engage with our service. So we might have this all singing and dancing, you know, kind of like list of interventions that we know are really effective in improving lots of different presentations. But actually, that's no good if children don't want to come and visit the service, you know. So it's really important that we consider, you know, kind of like how children and young people and families, you know, kind of would benefit from this help. You know, how have services been for the in the past? What's not been helpful? You know, what would be more helpful to them? So a lot of it is, you know, through the whole school approaches and the MHSTs already, we've been having things like coffee mornings for parents, where we can kind of like spend that time engaging, you know, kind of the parents in what we're doing, and getting a flavour for how they feel about what's kind of happening to them or what kind of services they need, and how we can kind of deliver that for them. We kind of engage, you know, really closely with all the kind of leads in the schools, and getting to know the teachers as well. So understanding it from their perspective. We've kind of got like steering groups, and we want to kind of do a lot more around participation, you know, kind of children and young people want from these services. And I think the biggest thing that we've learned from you, Kieran, is from your research and your reports that actually you've done a lot of this work, you know, on our behalf, you know, in Northeast Essex. And I think this is probably what's really important for other services in different areas to think about, is that we've got to all focus on what we can do best, and actually working together as, you know, kind of services in an area is really important, because it's actually our area of expertise in the MHST service is not participation. It's, you know, it's actually intervention, it's kind of breeding awareness, you know, for staff and supporting them to be able to kind of, you know, kind of support mental health awareness in the schools and be able to identify that. But also we want to encourage those schools to support us in participation, in that we want to go through our schools to understand what the voice of the children is. And actually, from the work that you've done and what you've done over the last 5 years with the CCG is exactly that. You've kind of given us a good flavour of what children want. Children want to be included. They've got specific areas that are really important to them. And, you know, because things like mental health is one of them, building resilience is another one of those. And so actually building programs and, you know, kind of group interventions, or making sure that our, you know, kind of one-to-one interventions, you know, form a big part of resilience building is going to be really important to our children, because that's what they've asked for. You know, so participation is not something that is, you know, done, you know, once in a year, and then that's it, you know, is left. It's a continuous thing, you know. So actually it's almost like a movement. We've been so poor, I think, in terms of like mental health services and everything being too clinical, that we've not really considered, you know, the needs of children and parents. They've just really been pushed to the back, really. And, you know, teachers have also been pushed a little bit to the back with them as well, you know. So they've kind of felt in the dark for quite a long time.
Yes.
So I think going forward, it's, we're really at the start of the journey of, you know, really engaging children and families in our service, to kind of really kind of shape our service and give their points of view and make sure that what we're doing really, really serves them. And I think that's going to take time to really embed, because it's definitely a new way of working. And I'm sure children and young people and their families are very suspicious. You know, they're very cynical. They've been let down, you know, for quite a long time. So they're probably sat here listening to this podcast and here we go again, another person. But I really do believe that, especially in Northeast Essex, you know, where we are, that there is a huge shift. And the only way we can do that is if we're working together, you know, with the Multi-Schools Council, with the educational psychologists, with Stephen and his team, the Alliance, you know, and kind of like really fitting into kind of what this whole agenda in Northeast Essex is around live well. Yeah. And, you know, like, and how we can kind of feel well, and actually children are kind of central to that. So I think going forward, it will be about, you know, kind of consistently finding ways to engage children and spending time doing that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I'm sure people could hear very clearly from everything you're saying that it is not just a tokenistic comment that you're making. And I wouldn't be so open to working with you if I felt that. And it is refreshing to hear, as you kind of mentioned, Tracy, because unfortunately, you know, in the past, services haven't always, whether that be health or whether that be education, haven't always been really open to that, which is why, as you mentioned, families, children can then become frustrated. But here we go, and this is a chance to really try and change that. So you have mentioned a couple of times already about the importance of kind of like multi-agency working, which is important in education, but is as important in health as well. You already mentioned OOMS and the kind of aims there, that this early intervention stuff will reduce those waiting lists. And we know for many children and families, that is one of their biggest kind of priorities, really. But just give us a bit of a flavour of maybe some of the other groups that maybe you haven't mentioned already that you're working with, or groups that you're open to working with in the future.
I mean, it's a huge task. And I guess for people out there listening, it's really complex how our communities are structured in terms of what kind of support and help of services is out there. So I guess what we have in every kind of county is a splitting, that we kind of have NHS funded services and we have local authority funded services. And so they operate under different authorities. So I guess how it all comes together is that, you know, the CCG, which are the clinical commissioning group, they kind of get, you know, kind of money from NHS England and an allocated budget. And then that money gets kind of, you know, kind of spread out to all these services, which are EUMS, the MHST service, you know, kind of paediatrics, perinatal, you know, all those kind of things. So clinical services kind of are kind of funded by NHS England. And then when it comes to the local authority, that comes out of another set of money from the government. So it comes from the government, you know, kind of social care support and education, and all of that money then goes into the local authority, which education comes under. Yeah. And lots of other services come under. So I think that sometimes can be really quite confusing. So actually a big part of like what we're trying to do with the MHST, again, what's kind of driving forward to be really different. So we're really kind of wanting to do a transformational change in really moving away from this is clinical, this is local authority, and having this division, but actually bringing everything together, that no, we're a community, we link together and we need to be working with each other. And that is the only way it's ever going to work, is if these services can find a way of coming together. And I believe that is really happening behind the scenes now. You know, I think the local authority and the CCG, you know, are becoming closer than they've ever been. You know, there really is a kind of like a really fluid flow now of services starting to link together. So, yeah, we've kind of obviously we work with EUMS, and, you know, we built a relationship with them. That is great. But actually expanding out of that, we've actually built a relationship with the Alliance. Another person we can talk about is Rebecca Morton and Tracy from Great Bentley, who have kind of piloted a emotional wellbeing hub, you know, in Tendering and Clacton. And actually they've got funding now to kind of take that out to quite a few schools. So that's kind of great work. And actually we fit in with that as well. You know, so it's important for us to kind of link with them to see what they're doing and kind of share our knowledges, you know, to make sure that we can kind of deliver this support to all schools. I talked earlier about working with Stephen and his team for the educational psychologists, and we've started to feed into there. So there's a lot of work with educational psychologists that are focused on kind of like, you know, mental health wellbeing for head teachers. You know, actually, we've also got a lot of money just recently for kind of returning back to education from COVID, in terms of, you know, every area has had a pot of money to kind of, you know, kind of put something on in terms of, you know, providing support to schools. And we've been delighted to be a part of that as the MHST. Other things that we're kind of part of are you yourself, the multi-schools and the resilience program that you're delivering and wanting to take that forward. We've also kind of like networked with Virgin Healthcare, who provide service to the school nurses.
Yes.
So again, that's been really important because, you know, they're a source of primary contact. You know, people go to their school nurses all the time, you know, for physical complaints. But actually those school nurses get to experience, you know, firsthand a lot of the children's views on things, you know, how they're feeling. So it's crucial that we're kind of linked together as a service. So that's been really important. Another big focus is SEND. You know, we really want to be involved with, you know, adapting our interventions so they're not just for, you know, kind of working with common mental health, you know, difficulties with, you know, kind of with just people in education streams, but we want it in special needs as well.
Yeah.
You know, we know that kind of a big part of disability is anchored by mental health problems. I mean, I'm always kind of overwhelmed with people who do Paralympics because it really kind of shows you just how capable these individuals are and that actually they can do anything, you know, if as long as you've kind of got purpose in life and you've got a kind of like compass of where you want to be and what you want to do, you know, these children are still ordinary children with ambitions and, you know, they want to fulfill their own potential and it might be in a different way, but a lot of what hampers their potential is their state of mind and, you know, kind of their own mental health. And that can come by kind of stigmatization, being bullied, you know, not being understood, you know, almost being compared against a non-disabled child as well, you know. So actually, like, a lot of it is how they're made to feel over the time and they're not getting any support for that. So, you know, kind of that's really, really important. And we know that these interventions can be effective with, you know, learning disabilities, with, you know, kind of neurodevelopment, you know, kind of difficulties like autism, ADHD, all those kind of things. And, you know, they still benefit from our interventions, you know, they help. So we need to make those accessible to those groups. So it's crucial that, you know, kind of we're building kind of, you know, professional networks and support with those kind of schools. And you know yourself, actually, through Market Field and the college, we've actually started to do that. And I think that's it. This is all new to us. I think this is new to everybody. This money has been given by the government to kind of roll out these mental health support teams, but we don't know how they're going to look, you know, and the nice thing that the government have done this time is not to kind of label a specific approach. So a big part of what's going to make this successful is the fact that we can create our model together to what's going to fit into our community. So going back to your point about why is it important to kind of, you know, kind of agency work with other people. Well, actually, it's because we need to build a model with them in terms of, well, how do we work with specific groups? How do we adapt our interventions to make sure that other people can access them and they can still be effective? You know, how do we signpost appropriately? How do we kind of make appropriate referrals? You know, how, you know, all of those kind of things. And actually, we can only do that if we're working together. So, you know, kind of leading on, it goes from, like, again, participation is important, understanding if our interventions are working is important, you know, making sure that we're multi-agency working with other people and not just tokenistically saying, oh, you know, let's work together and get in contact with that particular service, but really being joined together, you know, to kind of like being in regular contact with each other and really making sure that we understand what each other is doing. We're starting to do that, especially through our steering group. So for the MHST, we have a steering group which has not only other services, has people from the local authority, people from EAMS, from clinical settings, as parents of children, we've got teachers on there. So we're working really hard, you know, to not only just make that, you know, kind of collaboration and joined up approach happen, you know, on the grounds, but we're also doing that at a high level. That we've got people in senior positions, you know, coming together on our steering group, being a part of that.
And you, again, you've mentioned so much there, and that's why it's so important to hear your perspective. But actually, it's refreshing, as I said earlier, that a new service comes into the area and you have that kind of open-minded approach. And I think, as you mentioned a number of times, that's the only way that it could work. And you mentioned some really good points there, because if there are people listening to this podcast, you mentioned Steve Whitfield and his team. He did a podcast previous to this where he talks about that in more detail. And also Wendy Smith, who's one of our ambassadors, and she actually competed in the Paralympics for Great Britain. And she talks about some of the things you mentioned as well. So if people are interested, you could go back and listen to some of them. So I just wanted to ask you, talking about all this now, and obviously, you know, as you said, it is kind of being flexible and fluid with the number of things you've mentioned, responding to young people and the local need. In 3 years' time, Tracy, where would you like to see the service? If you had a crystal ball and you could look in it, where would you like it to be?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So I think, you know, for me, I think I'd want to see it expanded. And I think there's a good chance of that. So I'd like to see the MHSTs providing 100% coverage across the country, and especially in Northeast Essex. So, you know, even the MHST as well at the moment, is we can only work in specific schools. So we'd like to be able to, I'd like to see that across the whole of Northeast Essex in every single school. Yep. The reason we can't have it in every single school at the moment is because we only have enough funding to kind of serve a population of 8,000 children. And so how we calculate that is that we kind of calculate how many pupils are in a school, and then we kind of work up to how many schools we can, you know, work with till we get to that cap of 8,000.
Yeah.
So that makes it really difficult. So I think if, you know, people who do listen to this, it's hard because we don't have that full coverage, but that's exactly what we're aiming for. So my future board would love to see that. Everybody's getting this support. I'd like to see like a real kind of the whole school approaches really developed. So I'd love to see kind of staff feeling really confident in themselves, and, you know, kind of working with mental health, having a really good understanding of it, you know, and seeing the mental health leads in schools being, you know, kind of really taking on that role, being able to deliver their whole school approaches. And, yeah. And coordinate that. So another big part of the MHST driving forward is not to only be doing the whole school approaches, but to be supporting the schools to give them confidence to be able to do that. So I'd love to see a real shift in the educational staff being really competent and really confident in, you know, kind of spotting mental health difficulties, really understanding how they present, and, you know, kind of feeling really able to kind of deliver, you know, these whole school approaches in their schools. For the MHST team, I'd like to see more groups set up. Again, you know, we're in the infancy of, you know, kind of having basic groups at the moment. So we've got like groups for managing anxiety for children in primary school, well, parents in primary schools and children in secondary schools. I think one of the things that I didn't mention about the MHST teams was that actually in primary schools, the interventions we deliver are with the parents, not the children. And the reason for that is because there's a lot more evidence that if we children who kind of work, families who work with them can consistently work with them. And actually we know that a lot of children with mental health problems sometimes have family members who, you know, kind of suffer with a mental health problem as well. So actually working with the family to kind of almost understand a little bit about their own mental health and how their children's mental health can sometimes be really more effective than the practitioner working with the child. So from 9, 10 plus is when we would do direct work with the child. So, but in terms of how the work we deliver, the interventions, they're through group work or one work, as I kind of mentioned earlier. So I'd love to see a lot more groups in, you know, kind of 3 years' time, especially ones, you know, be more specific, looking at exam stress, you know, kind of transitioning, which we've kind of started to look at, you know, different types of anxieties, low mood, bullying, you know, so just having a lot more, you know, kind of targeted, you know, kind of groups, because I think actually the more we've got, the more resource we can give to the school and the children, the better support and improvement we're going to get in how they feel.
Yeah.
So that's what I'd love to see. I'd love to see more things developed for SEND schools. You know, I think that's really important.
Good answer.
But it's true, you know, like yeah. they've just got so much potential, and sometimes it's always a feeling that they've been left out, you know, over the years. So, you know, I think really kind of giving that fairness and seeing things really developed and people working really hard to kind of explore and evaluate what works, you know, with people with disability and how, you know, how we can impact that and really kind of like improve mental health and well-being in those groups. They've got great opinions and great perspectives on things. And I think what you tend to find is people who've like experienced the most hardship do have great insights into what can make things better.
Definitely.
So I'd love to see more of that happening. And, you know, and I'd love to see like everything being more joined up as well. You know, I think I can see it now, but I'd love to kind of see like more things available. Like, I mean, in terms of like working with Stephen Whitfield, you know, he's designed a trauma perceptive approach. Yeah. And actually recently we've been talking about how we could design some interventions off the back of that approach, you know, to kind of for teachers and, you know, kind of head teachers to engage in. So I think what I'd love is to see a lot of other interventions and programs that we deliver through the multi-agency work, you know, to kind of really support our schools, families and children. If we've achieved that, I'd want to hear that through the families. You know, I think if our families and our children like our service and see a massive difference and, you know, kind of feel a really huge impact, then I know that we're succeeding. So, and I think, again, going back to the participation's key. I really want to see, you know, kind of people shaping these services, parents, young children and the school settings. That's what I'd love to see in 3 years' time.
Brilliant. And like you say, that is everything that everyone's striving towards. And, you know, it's nowhere near perfect yet. But as you say, it's that we've got a clear vision of where we're going. And actually, we are steps ahead of where we were a few years ago. And we just need to continue on that path. So, Tracy, thank you so much for giving up so much of your time. I really appreciate you speaking to us. And I hope now parents and children, if they listen to this, have a bit of a better understanding about how the teams are working and what the plan is for the future. So thank you very much.
Everyone is different and special in their own way. We should be including everyone, so let's start today.